Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. My guest today is Marlies Arnold, a highly respected voice in the industry and host of the popular Trade Show Insights podcast and blog.
I actually started I would go walk shows and I would just make notes of like things that I observed, things that exhibitors were doing well, things that they were doing wrong. And so eventually all of these notes started coming together and I thought, you know, I should just write a book. And so the first edition of Build a Better Trade Show Image came out in 2002. And basically, I wrote that as the how-to guide that I wish I would have had as a starting exhibitor.
Marlies brings a unique perspective to trade show exhibiting with experience as both an exhibitor and a show organizer. For more than two decades, she advised thousands of exhibitors through consultations and workshops for events, ranging from local consumer expos to major US trade shows. She has written two books on the subject, the award-winning Build a Better Trade Show Image and Exhibit Design That Works. A respected voice in the industry, Marlies frequently contributes to top publications and podcasts, in addition to hosting the highly regarded Trade Show Insights blog and podcast. She is also the creative mastermind behind the Exhibit Marketers Cafe, an online hub for learning. Now, on to this insightful session with Marlies Arnold. Marlies, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I am delighted to have you here. I know it's pretty late where you are, and thank you for making time.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's fun to be on this side of the mic for once. Usually I'm the one doing the asking the questions, so...
I know. I mean, 20 years of the Trade Show Insights. I mean, what a milestone. It is, I mean, as I was telling you, it's literally an Oscar moment. Tell me how you're feeling.
It's finally starting to sink in. It's kind of funny. It's like kind of snuck up on me. Like all of a sudden I realized it's like, oh yeah, I started in 2006. This is the 20th anniversary. And it's like, then when I was putting together that anniversary episode and really looking back at the history and how I started and what I was doing. And I actually went back and listened to my very first episode, which, you know, wasn't really anything to write home about, but, you know, it was pretty exciting to hear that there were some things that I established early on. Like, you know, I've had the same theme song music from the beginning. And, you know, so a lot of the focus of the podcast has stayed the same over the years. It's evolved as the technology evolved and the industry has evolved.
Right. Absolutely. You also have written books, started an academy and a social network for exhibitors. Tell us a bit about these initiatives as well.
Right. Well, my background is I had done some exhibiting for my own business. I'd also helped to organize some expos and events. And so I had some experience on both sides. And then when I started out as a consultant and teaching exhibitor workshops and doing all of these things, I actually started I would go walk shows and I would just make notes of like things that I observed, things that exhibitors were doing well, things that they were doing wrong. And so eventually all of these notes started coming together and I thought, you know, I should just write a book. And so the first edition of Build a Better Trade Show Image came out in 2002. And basically, I wrote that as the how-to guide that I wish I would have had as a starting exhibitor. And, you know, all of the things that I wish I would have known before I went to my first show or even my 10th show. So that was really the focus of that book was everything, what to do before, during, and after the show. And then I wrote exhibit design that works, which is just, it's a smaller, shorter book that's just designed, focused just on how to design the exhibit, how to make it look good, how to make it more engaging and multisensory, all those kinds of things. And then in 2023, I did an updated version of Build a Better Trade Show Image. So that book has been updated and has a newer, more expanded edition, and which actually won a Best Indie Book Award for the second edition. So that was a really cool milestone as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You should come back to on the other show and talk about your books.
That would be great. I'd love to.
Yeah, I look forward to that. So tell me, when you look back, and obviously you are looking at the exhibition and trade show industry for nearly three decades now, what has been the biggest change over the over this period of time?
Well, it's interesting that obviously there are a lot of things that have changed dramatically just based on, you know, how the world has changed. You know, we've been through 9/11, we've been through the Great Recession, we've been through the pandemic. So, you know, the industry has had to adapt and change and evolve through all of those challenges. But sadly, there's a lot of things about the industry that really haven't changed all that much in the last 25 plus years, which is frustrating to me because I feel like there's so much more that could be changing, that the industry could evolve so much more. One of the things I started talking about, well, when the book came out the first time in 2002, I had a section in there talking about virtual shows and, you know, how to incorporate virtual and make it more of a 365 day event. And then when the pandemic happened, I thought, now everybody's going to understand and see the point of why you need to have elements that you're, you know, so your show has more of a year-round element to it. But sadly, after the pandemic, everybody's like, we don't have to do virtual anymore. Let's just all go back to in-person only. And so they lost the fact that there were so many people during the pandemic. I was attending like every virtual event that I could find, virtual trade shows, some good, some a lot of them not so good, you know, but I was attending all of these events and taking notes and observing. And one thing I saw over and over, didn't matter what event it was, I saw so many people in the chat that were saying, thank you so much for doing this. I've never been able to actually come to the show in person, you know, because I don't have the travel budget, or, you know, I'm a caretaker and I can't get away, or, you know, physical disabilities, or just, you know, no budget or whatever. That this was an opportunity that they actually got to be involved in an industry event that they would never have otherwise been able to. And I thought it was so sad when the pandemic ended and everybody went back to, okay, we're done with virtual. Then you just lost all that audience that was so eager to actually feel like a part of the event.
Yeah, I agree. And why it happened, I mean, there could be some underlying issues. Some of the platforms became too big too quickly. I mean, our industry leaders could have been sort of bothered by that. There could have been an economic/business motivation. But to your point, the ability to extend the event is now sacrificed because we didn't want to continue.
Right. And like I said, it's because a lot of people see it as an either or. It's like, well, you know, we're doing in person, so we can't do virtual, or, you know, vice versa. And it's not meant to be an either or. It's more of an addition. You know, it's an enhancement. It's another way to reach a different audience. It's a way to extend the show, a lot of the things that happened during the pandemic as far as the virtual. There were some very creative interactive activities, some very creative activations that some of these groups did. And, it all just kind of ended. And I can't say everywhere. I mean, there are some groups that are still doing some very creative things online. But anyway, that's just one piece. Another piece is that I wish, you know, and I'm kind of talking about more my wish list rather than how it's changed, things that I would have loved to have seen happen over the last 25 years that I'm still working towards. I'm still trying to, you know, I feel like I'm like out there really as an evangelist for a lot of these ideas and trying to really get people to get inspired and to give things a try. And I realize that our industry as a whole is not necessarily the easiest one to like turn the ship around.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's really hard to get these, some of these really big shows to kind of innovate and try new things. But one of the things that I really would love to see, and I did a podcast episode on this several years ago, about the whole idea of what trade shows can learn from IKEA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of my favorite stores. I love to just go wander around IKEA, see what's new, check things out. But what I'm focused on is how is IKEA set up? I mean, yes, they have their sections. You know, you have the furniture section and you have you know, kids area and you have the kitchenwares and all these different sections, but you also have like this whole apartment or house that you wander through and you can see how all the products work together and how they could be used in real life. And I think more shows need to find a way to do things like that. Hmm. where it's not just, you know, rows and rows of all these 10 by 10 or 10 by 20 or however big exhibits, but having more of an area where it's showcasing how this all works in the real world. One of the best examples, and I did a article on this several years ago, was a medical show, and they had an ER on the floor, right. An emergency room on the floor. And so several times a day, they would actually have like these, you know, interactions where they would do like it was a, you know, a medical crisis, and they would show everything would come to life. And so the whole audience could gather around and watch and see all these products in action and how, you know, all these different medical devices and systems and things work together in a real world situation. And I think Right. Things like that, if more shows could do stuff like that, it's so much more engaging for the audience. And it's so much more effective for the exhibitor too, because it's not just, hey, come watch this video in my booth, but it's, hey, this is how our device works in a real ER.
Right, right. And I'm just trying to imagine why people are not doing it. Would you recall the name of the show where they did this?
It was, well, it's always hard in this industry. That's all the acronyms. It was ACEP. I think it's American College of Emergency Physicians or something like that. Physicians was the group, but you know, it's something that can be translated across the board into other arenas as well. You know, I mean, if it's more of a retail type show, have like a store set up. You know, if it's manufacturing, you could have like a little mini manufacturing interaction
right.
activity or construction or whatever. You know, I think there's so many possibilities to do it in so many different industries. But again, it's trying to get people to think outside the box, or as I like to say, think outside the booth.
Right, right. Coming back, what would you say has actually changed? Is it the use of technology in a few? I mean, I wanted to talk about that separately, but now we are there. What has actually changed, according to you? Or is it really nothing significant?
Well, I think a lot of what's changed, like you said, is the technology. It's like, you know, we've come from just, you know, hey, write your name on this slip of paper and drop it in a fishbowl for a drawing or whatever, you know, to, hey, let me scan your badge. Or even better now is all of these, you know, interactive software tools that we have where you can scan the badge and it automatically exports it, puts it into your CRM, you know, gives you immediate ways to follow up with people, you know, gamifying the whole thing, you know, even, you know, some of these software tools, you can even have somebody, you know, playing a game in your booth, and then it automatically captures all their contact information and then, you know, sends that into your CRM and allows you to follow up with them and all of those kinds of things. Those are really great advancements. You know, and now, of course, we're dealing with the whole idea of AI and what's possible. And, you know, there's some things that are really good. And then, of course, there's some things that maybe are not the best idea to do in your booth, or, you know, the ways to use the technology. But I think that AI has a lot of potential for, you know, having ways that, again, you can automate so many things, you know, making it easier, making things automatic. So maybe like, you know, having it where if somebody walks into your booth, you know, if they can get the badges to be interactive somehow. So, you know, somebody can walk in your booth and it immediately would pop up with a greeting. It's like, you know, hey, you know, Steve or whoever, you know, welcome to our booth, or, you know, automatically come up and start playing some kind of a video based on what that person's, you know, attendee profile says about them, maybe what they're looking for, and have it. I'd really love to see more exhibitors have like an interactive experience, a guided experience in their booth, where it's more of a story, you know, like leading people through a story in your exhibit, where it's kind of almost like the, you know, I don't know if you were familiar, when I was a kid, we used to have these choose your own adventure books where it's like you'd read to a certain section and then it would say, oh, if you choose option A, jump to page 85. If you choose option B, jump to page, you know, 106 or whatever. And it's the same kind of thing, you know, using AI in a way that it can customize and tailor that booth experience to every single visitor based on, you know, maybe what they filled out on their attendee profile, you know, any interactions you've had with them beforehand. You could have that tagged somehow in the system so that it could guide that person through the experience in your booth.
Right, right. Going back to the change question, can you sort of break it down in terms of what has changed for organizers, exhibitors, and attendees? Can we try that? That what, according to you, have been the biggest changes for organizers, exhibitors, and attendees? And then possibly we'll come back and see what are the biggest mistakes each of these groups are making.
Okay, well, so biggest changes as far as organizers, I think they're trying to do a lot more with less staff. And so the organizers are spread really thin and they, you know, maybe are not, they don't have the budgets that they used to have. Well, the same thing with the exhibitors, you know, they may not have the budgets that they used to have to do all the things that they used to do. They've got to learn to be more creative and more efficient with their budget, especially on the exhibitor side. You know, it's gotten to where 60% or more of their budget is eaten up before they ever even get to the show floor, between, you know, paying for the booth space, paying to ship the exhibit there, paying to get their people there, you know, getting all the show services, all those kinds of things. It's taken up a huge amount of their budget. And that's all stuff that's required, but it's not things that actually produce results. And so I think the most challenging things for exhibitors now is you've got this really small amount of your budget left. And that's all the money that has to go for your pre-show marketing, your any kind of giveaways that you do in the booth, you know, any other things that you're doing that are actually what's going to produce the results, you know, to drive the return on your investment, is just this small piece of the pie. So that's a big thing that's changed for exhibitors. I mean, it was always expensive to do an exhibit, but now it's even more expensive, especially post-pandemic. It's gotten even more expensive for exhibitors. And so it's more of a challenge to try to figure out how to really make the most out of that part of your budget.
Right.
for attendees, I think the thing that's changed the most is the generations. You know, when 25 years ago, it was mostly boomers attending shows. Hmm. Now it's mostly Gen Y and even Gen Z. And so and I was just talking with a Gen Z person just last week, and she was telling me about how for her, she works from home. You know, so she's remote. She works at home by herself. She goes to a trade show and she feels so overwhelmed. And she's like, I don't know anybody. Hmm. I don't know where to even begin. So I think a lot of the Gen Zs are feeling so overwhelmed. And so they're not spending as much time on the show floor just because they don't feel comfortable. So I think that's, again, something that we all need to be working on is how can we make people, especially if they're introverts, making them feel comfortable on the show floor and making them feel welcome and not like the moment they set foot on the show floor, they're going to be attacked by 16 exhibitors.
Right. It's very interesting you say this, you know, Marlies, because I was interviewing Dr. Corey Simler a few episodes back. And she is an expert on Gen Z.
Mm.
And she literally said exactly the same thing, that they are not equipped to engage with people on their own because they are mostly mostly working alone, right?
And they're online. They spend all their time online and they don't have those interpersonal skills. This person even pointed out that she graduated from college in 2020. So she said, I didn't even do in-person interviews. I didn't have the practice interviews. I didn't have the one-on-one, you know, face-to-face thing. She's like, I don't really get how to interact in a face-to-face situation. So, and I think, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. So it's like, you know, that was normal for us, but I never really stopped to think that for the Gen Zs, that's something that's making them feel very intimidated.
Yeah.
Is walking into this show floor because it's overstimulating. I mean, there's so much going on and all the noise and the, you know, flashing LED screens and all these things. And it's like, so a lot of people, if they're just feeling overwhelmed, they just kind of shut down and, you know, maybe only go visit a handful of exhibitors that they know they need to go see, but they're not taking time to explore the show floor. And so I think that's something that we all need to work on is how can we make the show floor less intimidating and more welcoming?
Absolutely. It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
And I hear this from exhibitors a lot. One of the breakdowns is because they don't have, you know, like maybe they have anywhere from a 2 to 4 year sales cycle. So just because, you know, they meet me at XYZ show in 2026, I may not buy from them until 2029, you know, and so it's hard for them to justify and really see where did all these leads come from without being able to say, oh, we met this person at a show last month and now they bought.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. You mentioned follow-up by exhibitors, right? As a part of the process, AI is trying to follow up. You know, I have had at least 5 guests on my show, and all of them say that 70% of exhibitors don't follow up at all. Would you think that's does this number resonate with you?
Yeah, I always say it's probably more like 80% that don't follow. And you think that's like, oh, that can't possibly be true until you actually go to a show as an attendee, you know. And that's something that I've actually shared some examples, you know, in my podcast and also in my book of some really bad follow-up experiences that I've had. You know, like I got, I remember one time I got a brochure. It was a travel agent, and I got a brochure for the place that I had talked about, But the letter said, like, "Dear Julie, congratulations on your upcoming honeymoon." And I'm like, no. A, I'm not Julie, and B, this wasn't a honeymoon, it was a vacation, you know. And it's like, okay, yeah, I'm not trusting you to book my travel, you know.
Yeah.
But then I think the winner was one time I got a message on my voicemail that's like, "Hey, this is John. I'm just trying to do all these follow-up calls and get them out of the way." Yeah, right. Okay.
This is a nice joke, by the way.
Yeah. It's like, okay, thanks for being honest. You get points for that. But no, I'm not calling you back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite astounded. And at some point, I will have a more detailed discussion with you about this, because I think that's a confounding problem, right? I mean, it's like, why would you do that? Why would you spend $20,000 and not follow up on your booth visitors?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and all the stories I've heard over the years of like exhibit houses that rent exhibits, and they would get the rentals back with all the leads inside the case. So like literally the company didn't even go home with the leads because they packed them in the case and shipped it back to the exhibit house. And I'm like, oh.
Wow. This is really strange, right? It's very strange.
It is very strange. Yeah. It's almost like if somebody does a good follow-up, it's so remarkable just because there's so few of them that do, you know. I mean, it's almost like, it's really sad, but that's like a great way to stand out, is just by doing adequate, you know, it doesn't even have to be stellar, but just doing some kind of decent follow-up, you're going to stand out because there's so many other exhibitors that don't even bother. So, you know, and again, we have tools now that make it so much easier. Like I said, if you scan the badge and it automatically puts them into your CRM system, then you've got a way that you can easily follow up with them. You know, I think one of the breakdowns, and I hear this from exhibitors a lot, one of the breakdowns is because they don't have, you know, like maybe they have anywhere from a 2 to 4 year sales cycle. So just because, you know, they meet me at XYZ show in 2026, I may not buy from them until 2029, you know, and so it's hard for them to justify and really see where did all these leads come from without being able to say, oh, we met this person at a show last month and now they bought. So that's part of the problem too. And that's beyond the realm of the exhibit manager on one hand, because they have to work with whoever it is in the sales department that's really doing all this tracking and making sure that they're seeing that this is eventually coming to fruition.
Right, right. Absolutely. Going back to the question, I wanted to ask, what are the mistakes that organizers, exhibitors, and attendees, all, each of these groups, which essentially are the three legs of the stool on which the trade show industry stands, right? Mm-hmm. What are the mistakes they're continuing to make?
Well, one of the mistakes that the show organizers are making is that, and again, not everybody, but a lot of show organizers are treating their exhibitors like vending machines. That they're just like, you know, they're collecting the money and then they just kind of move on. And they're not really giving them a full, giving them their full attention, really helping them. You know, I've always looked at, especially since I have a background where I've been an exhibitor, I've been a show organizer, so I've seen both sides. I really try to always be that bridge to help both sides see it's not an us versus them. It should be everybody working together as a team. And so, right. You know, you talk about mistakes. The mistakes can kind of be on both sides. You know, the exhibitors don't necessarily take advantage of the things that the show organizers are offering them. You know, they'll complain about, well, you know, the show organizer's not doing enough to get people to my booth. And I'm like, well, okay, they gave you free marketing tools. Did you use them? You had the ability to fill out an online exhibitor profile. Did you do that? And the answer for so many of those are no, because I can go, I could scan a list of exhibitor profiles and immediately see all the ones that still have the show logo as their logo. I know they didn't bother to fill it out. They didn't even put their logo in there. So, you know, so that's really obvious. So the exhibitors are not taking advantage of the tools. The show organizers are, like I said, they're collecting the money and then kind of, okay, here you go. Have fun. We'll see you on the show floor in 6 months or whatever. But I really try to work with my show organizer clients. I really work with them to build a whole suite of tools to help their exhibitors be more successful. And of course, you can't force anybody to use the tools. I found most shows that I work with, we end up about 25 to maybe 30% of the exhibitors take advantage of the tools we offer. But again, at least they're being offered, you know, things like doing exhibitor training, having maybe a podcast, you know, a series of podcasts or short video tips or all those kinds of things, you know, giving them the opportunity to have one-on-one consultations where they can ask questions about their specific booth, you know, all these different kinds of things. Having ways for the exhibitors to learn how to be more successful is so important. And then, of course, following up with them after the show, the organizer following up with the exhibitors after the show, finding out how it went, getting their feedback, which sometimes can be very hard to hear, but getting their feedback, the exhibitors might be seeing something that's broken with the show that the organizer's not aware of. And same thing, the organizer's talking to the attendees, you know, learning from the attendees, what are their pain points? And one of the things I've found a lot of times is either an exhibitor or an attendee pain point can often be turned around to become a special feature at the show or even some kind of a sponsored feature at the show. So it can become a revenue generator for the organizer if they only take time to you know, investigate and learn what some of these things are.
Can you give an example of this?
Well, like one of the things that's common at a lot of shows is everybody complains there's not enough seating. You know, you, exhibitors, attendees, everybody, it's like, you know, everybody's fighting over like three benches in the hallway, you know, and you've got people sitting all over the floor or, you know, sitting outside on the curb or whatever. You know, what about just having seating that's sponsored? You know, and providing that. So the organizer's not footing the bill for all of this, but the exhibitor or the sponsor is, you know, sponsoring, whether that be one of these little conversation pods, you know, that you've, you may have seen at a lot of shows, having those, having just benches that are labeled or, you know, creating a whole experience around a seating area or, you know, whatever. But there are ways to do that and make that actually a revenue generator. And it's like, everybody's happy. The sponsor gets, you know, good visibility out of it. The attendees have a great place that they can go and just, you know, hang out for a few minutes. And the organizer is getting added revenue. So, to me, it seems like a win-win all the way around.
I totally agree. And it's such a simple thing to do. It doesn't need any major overhauling of systems. Possibly you don't even need a different vendor. It is really a matter of, like you said, it's a matter of applying your mind, listening and thinking and just getting it done.
Yeah, exactly.
This is such a good example, because I mean, why I love this example is because it is something which is so low hanging, yet such a big problem. I mean, I would only add that put multiple plug points so more people can charge their phones and more people are not struggling with, you know, trying to find a place where they can plug in their laptop.
Right. Well, and another thing is transportation, you know, because so many like really large shows, they have this whole transportation bottleneck. So figuring out some creative transportation ideas and getting those sponsored and, you know, so it's just listening to what's the problem and then figuring out how do we take the problem and fix it, but fix it in a way that's actually going to benefit everybody.
Right. Such a wonderful idea. I also wanted to now dive into that small thought experiment that I wrote to you about, which is sort of culmination of all that we discussed now. You know, I as I wrote, Brian Chesky who is the founder of Airbnb. He spoke to Reid Hoffman for a podcast called Masters of Scale, where he did this spoke about this thought experiment that they do internally about what's the 11-star experience for an Airbnb customer. And that sort of made me think that what if we, who are part of the trade show industry, try to imagine what could be a 11-star experience for, what could be an 11-star event or a trade show. I mean, obviously, we know what a 1-star could be when nothing works.
Yeah. And we've been to a few of those.
Yeah, exactly, right? What would you think? I mean, progressively. I mean, I don't expect you to tell me all the stars, 1-star is this and 2-star is this, but progressively, can you imagine what would you think could be a 11-star experience, maybe 5-star, 7-star, whatever?
Well, you know, again, some of the things that we've already talked about, like I said, solving the attendee problems with creative sponsorship options, that could turn a, you know, maybe a 3 or 4-star experience into a 10 or 11 star experience. You know, solving these problems that people just feel like they deal with at every show. You know, you talked about in the information you sent me, you talked a little bit about making that red carpet experience from the time they first enter the event. I think I've seen a handful of shows doing what they call a regiception, where it's registration, but there's also, you know, because everybody does like a closing night reception or closing night party. What about having a party as people are checking in at registration? You know, so having that fun party vibe, it gives everybody a good chance. It might help with that whole situation we talked about too, where the introverts or the Gen Zs feel like they don't know anybody. They come in to registration, they have an opportunity to kind of, you know, there's music or there's fun activities or whatever. And they have that opportunity to kind of get to know people in a little bit more of a low key environment. And so then the next day on the show floor, they're seeing familiar faces and they're feeling more comfortable. Along with that, I've seen shows do a first timers event where they have something on, you know, either the morning of or the day before, they'll have a first timers event where it's kind of an orientation, but it's also an opportunity where all the first timers get to meet each other. So they're all feeling very, you know, confused and alone, and they have that opportunity to interact with each other. And just kind of going on that whole making people feel comfortable, another idea, Exhibitor Show, well, Exhibitor Live now, they did for years and years when the show was in Vegas, they would have what they called Dinner with Strangers. And we could sign up because, you know, I'm a solopreneur, so I'm always there by myself. I'm, you know, I'm staying by myself. I eat by myself, whatever. But you could sign up to go to a restaurant with a group of like 10 or 12 other people. And you just pick the restaurant, you sign up, and then you go and you have dinner with all these people and you have this wonderful opportunity to get acquainted. I have some people that I'm still in contact with 10, 15 years later that I met at Dinner with Strangers. So, you know, that's another way, again, solving a pain point for your attendees. You know, people are feeling like, well, we had two different kinds of people. We had people like me that were alone, or we had the people that were with their team and were tired of their team. So they were happy to go. Be with other people.
Right. And focus on the experience of all the participants, right? So the exhibitors, in this case, the organizer is facilitating this. So both the exhibitor and the attendee, this is where the focus needs to be, that both of these groups are actually going back with a feeling, well, this was different. This is something I'll remember.
Yeah. And that was a great mix too, because we had both in any one dinner group, we would have some exhibitors and some attendees and, you know, and maybe even a speaker or two, you know, so you were meeting all different kinds of people from within the event.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot that can be done. And as we discussed, it can start with very simple things like having more seating. The whole point is to listen and act on small things which make a big difference.
Right. And you don't have to like reinvent the entire show. Just look at pieces, you know, whether you're the organizer or an exhibitor. If you're the organizer, look at things like we've talked about, you know, where are people complaining and how can you fix that? And as an exhibitor, really start to think about things from the attendee's point of view and how can you make your booth more of an experience that the attendees will welcome and feel feel like it was worthwhile and feel like they learned something. You know, it's not too many exhibitors take the approach of, hey, I'm just going to tell you everything there is to know about my product and my company and blah, 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 blah. Instead of, hi, what is it that you came to learn? You know, what are you struggling with? How can I help you? And even if it's not something that they particularly can do, you know, if you come into my booth and you're talking about a problem that I can't solve, well, I may know somebody else who can, and I can be that introduction for you to that person. And that's going to, you know, that's going to make me look good to the attendee who feels like, wow, I wasn't even buying from this person and she helped me out. And it's also going to make me look good to whoever the person is that I'm recommending as well. So I think a lot of it is just really, really looking at things from the attendee's viewpoint.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have had these discussions when I talk to exhibitors that you need to know the lay of the land. You need to know who else is exhibiting. So you can guide somebody mm-hmm. who is looking for something and just point them to the right direction. That goes a long way.
Well, I can even remember at a show where I was talking with an exhibitor and he's like, oh, you know who you need to meet. And he actually literally walked me over to the other booth and said, hey, I want to introduce the two of you and, you know, and then just kind of let us take it from there. But I mean, you know, that really, that said more to me, even if I wasn't interested in what he was selling, that said a lot to me about him and his company if he took that approach and he was willing to make that introduction and go above and beyond. So, right. You know, again, and you know, it's not about, like we said, it's not about that instant win of, you know, hey, you're going to come to my booth and I'm going to sell you something next week. It's about I'm building that relationship. And maybe I wasn't in the market for what he was selling right then, but because he made an impression on me, when time came, or if I had a client who might be interested or whatever, I was going to remember that booth because I was like, wow, they were really kind and they weren't pushy and they were informative and willing to help me. So, right. You know, it's trade shows are the long game. You know, it's not about the quick wins. It's about building that relationship and getting people to understand how you can help them and how you want to help them and, you know, making that impression so that when it is time for them to make a buying decision, you are the first company that comes to mind.
Absolutely. Just before we wrap up, have you seen any organizer actually doing a attendee survey, not as in a, oh, you visited our show last week, here is a questionnaire, please fill it up. Not like that, but actually face to face. While they're there, having conversations, and have you seen anyone doing it at all?
I can't think of any examples where I have, and probably one of the reasons is what I mentioned earlier, where the show organizers are spread really thin and they don't have the manpower to actually be doing those kinds of interviews on the show floor. I think that's something that would be very worthwhile to have, you know, even just having like a little like a podcast booth type thing where people could just kind of pop in and maybe do like a little quick video testimonial of just, you know, maybe there's like a list of questions and they could just really quick record, hey, here's what I thought, you know, and it would be great. They could get testimonials where they could have an attendee saying, oh, this was fabulous. And I met so many great exhibitors and here's what I learned or whatever. But then they could also have, and here's where I was frustrated or here's where I felt lost or confused or whatever. And then maybe that would be something that then they could act on later.
Right. Absolutely. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive buyer qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com. Marlies, this has been wonderful. thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate your sharing.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Shubhangin. I'm sorry that the video didn't work, but hey, at least we have the audio, and there's always next time.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhangin Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.